Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 104.
2 years.
2 years of the Poisoner's Cabinet. So it is officially our season two finale.
Yes, indeed. How very exciting. How have we got here?
This is a special episode this week. We are going to do a retrospective on the past 2 years of The Poisoner's Cabinet, season one and season two, looking at the highlights of the show, some of the weirdest cases, the most cunning, the strangest, the funniest, the most drinkiest.
The most bastardly.
2 years of doing this podcast. Now, when I was doing my research back and thinking of, how did we begin? I listened to something like episode 20. And we marveled that we'd gotten to 20.
That is true. I still marvel every time we do one. It's like we're still here.
Why is it such a marvel to you, Nick?
Well, I'm just never convinced that why on earth would people want to listen to me ramble on. Or either of us ramble on. And it's lovely that people do. But I'm always slightly amazed by that.
And it is nice that we do have fans and people who want to hear us. We haven't just stubbornly done this for one person. Yes. Just going, yes,
no one listening. It's actually all the listens are me.
And you and your various guys.
Or many, many various devices and things.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
Yeah, yep. You good?
I'm good. Yeah, yes. Indeed. No, it's, I'm looking forward to this one. I've got pages of notes in front of me. So you're going to hear lots of rustling as I like flip through pages and things.
So what are we going to be doing today then, Nick?
So we're going to have a cocktail. I mean, it'd be crazy if we didn't have a cocktail. Our first dry episode. That's not going to happen.
Imagine if season three was dry.
There is no season three. So, not happening. What are we going to do? We're going to have a chat. We are going to, we've got some categories. You've chosen some of your favourites. I've chosen some of mine. And there are many, many comments and suggestions from the podcasty world out there, people who listen. So, yeah, we've got lots of stuff to have a chat about and go through.
Indeed. We have been asking all of you lovely listeners to share your own highlights on the show, your opinions on certain cases. And we've had loads of feedback from people, which has been great. There are some popular ones that have been on everyone's list that we're going to talk about, some of the cases and the people that we featured on the show. Also, it's been delightful to hear people's own highlights and things that we'd forgotten about.
Yeah, some that I've not gone back to and listened to or has sort of slipped from memory. So it's nice to go back and see some of the old ones.
But sometimes they just slip out of your memory and you have to go, did we do that? Oh yeah, we did do that story. Yeah. Oh, that was a good story. That was nice.
I mean, the amount of times when researching new episodes, I go, oh, this is a really good one. Oh, this is really good. Oh, we did it 6 months ago. Oh, crap.
And it's been really nice to hear about the ones that really seem to resonate with you. Sometimes we're a little worried for you. Some of the comments we get back are just like, yeah, more detail about people eating each other's skin. It's like, okay.
Right, okay. I missed those comments. Thank God.
I deleted them, Nick, so you wouldn't see them.
Good.
I put them in my own personal diary to gaze at each night.
Well, there were you.
So when this episode comes out, Nick and I will actually be out of the country. We will be in the US of A. We are taking a little holiday to celebrate someone's birthday. We are going to take a very short break after we come back, just so we can prepare the start of season three and get some more cases together. But are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Oh, yes.
Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
No, I definitely want a cocktail.
You definitely want a cocktail.
I definitely want a cocktail.
It is time for a cocktail. Okay, we'll go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. If we're going to be talking about all of these poisonings and murders, we can't possibly have any stories without a cocktail in hand.
God, no.
Now, as you know, dear listeners, every week we normally choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell to flavour our cocktail of the week. But as it's a special episode, the secret ingredient this week is poison.
It's poison.
Poison for all. This week we're going to drink poison, talk about cocktails, going to mix the two together, we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Both Sinead and I have been sitting here flipping back through all the previous episodes, what cocktails have we had, and picking out some favourites. And we're going to have a few of them.
So, Nick, what have been your cocktail highlights?
Oh, now, see, I've got to go down my particular page in my book where I've written down all my cocktail favourites. There's a lot of them. There, flippity-flippity-flippity-flippity-flippity. There we go. We've had some amazing ones, I have to say. We've had some terrible ones. I think the good ones generally outnumber the bad ones.
Over 100 cocktails.
This is true. Yeah.
We've done some episodes with two, some with four. That was interesting. For your benefit, guys.
We hated every minute of it.
Well, there were some low points.
Yeah, there were some questionable things like that. But we'll start with the good things. So even very recently, we had the 100-year-old cigar. Love that.
Oh, yes, you
just
love
a couple
that.
Of weeks ago, and that was, oh, that was good.
You went that mental
was,
for that.
I did. I really, really enjoyed that one, so that was really good. But we've had some other ones, which as I was going through, I was going, why didn't I make these more often? These were great.
Mm.
And I don't. So we had the Jackrabbit.
Yes, the Jackrabbit.
Back in the day, gin, dry vermouth, and some apricot going on in there, and a few other bits and pieces. That was lovely. Well, we had the Shark Bite.
The Shark Bite.
The good old blue cocktail with the scary blood.
Now, we have made that
We
again.
Did. We made that at Halloween last year, didn't we? So, yes. But that went down a treat, that one, for a bit of a jokey cocktail.
Yeah.
It was really good.
We always judge the best cocktails when we've been looking back over the past 2 years. We've judged it on, have we made them again?
Mm.
Have we finished the show and gone, let's have another one of those? While we often say with a good one, oh, that shall go on the list, we make it again, the vast majority we don't.
Yeah, but that's true.
The really special ones end up in front of us on an evening while we're chatting. Shark Bite was one, which is a great party one.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of our friends kind of, when I said, would you like to try it? And they sort of scoffed at us and went, it's blue. And then we said, no, you have to try it. And they went, oh my God.
That's so good.
That's so good.
I mean, whatever. We had the Phantom Love Song. You were a big fan of those.
I was really blown away.
You were in for
that
for a few weeks. You were making those just for fun.
Now, what's in a Phantom Love Song?
So that was the sake and the elderflower with a drop of lime.
Yes.
Going on in that one. So that was really lovely.
And someone who doesn't like elderflower in most things, but the elderflower liqueur that you have is really subtle. But that was a real revelation. Sake, yeah. Elderflower.
Who'd have thunk it? I mean, then you've got the absolute classics. I mean, Corpse Reviver. Great, mean, lovely cocktail and sends you insane. So what's not to love about one of those? Casino Number One.
Oh,
we've done
good.
A few of those. Aviations, we've had a few of those. They are cocktails that I had made previously and then they were introduced into the podcast. They were all fantastic. And one of the things, well, one of the weirdest ones we've not had on the show, we've never done a Negroni. The amount I bang on about them on Patreon and just general drinking, we've never actually had one as the cocktail of the week. So
it sort of feels like a cheat, doesn't it? It's a bit like having a gin and tonic.
This is true.
But it's always there in the background, supporting us. We know it's a supporting player in the poisonous cabinet.
But we had the closing argument, which was part of our Christmas sort of four cocktail madness. The one where we managed to sneak some chartreuse pasta nade. Actually quite enjoyed it. So that will always go down as a highlight.
That's a highlight for you. I did have a think about this. Now, when I was looking back at the many cocktails, the one thing that I have learned is that chartreuse is the devil's juice. There have been but two occasions where chartreuse has appeared in
but
a cocktail.
Two.
But two. And that I didn't find it hideous. I didn't actually mind it. One of the cocktails was the Naked and Famous.
Yes, that's a good one on my list. Again,
that
another mezcal-y one.
One that I have ordered in a cocktail bar. Nick, you know, got up from fainting. But yes, that has mezcal and chartreuse in it. So that combination works. And that also was the basis of the closing argument.
It was indeed, yeah, mezcal and chartreuse, absolutely. Yeah.
I am going to reserve judgment on the closing argument because I know I just talked about how great it was and I was convinced I'd had four drinks.
This is also true. That was the fourth cocktail of the day.
Poured chartreuse at a shoe and I would have said it was amazing by that point because I didn't have any feeling left in my tongue by then. So yeah, chartreuse, I am yet to be convinced that chartreuse is good. However, I've learned a lot from doing this show. I've learned so much about the different liqueurs, the different drinks and the combinations, I think, through your education of all of us, Nick, and through us just experimenting.
Well, exactly, yeah. And yeah, I mean, I've come across stuff that I would never have drunk before. I'm not a whiskey fan. I don't drink whiskey just for having a glass of whiskey. But we've done a lot of whiskey cocktails and some of them have been really, really good. Things I never would have tried otherwise.
There's sort of a regular now. You know, if I go out for a night out, I'll be like, yeah, I'll have a Red Hook. I'll have a Boulevardier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which is really weird. I never would have thought that would have been my jam. What have you learned? You were very experienced in cocktails beforehand.
Well, I wouldn't get that. I wouldn't say that far. I've certainly broadened my horizon. I've learned that less is more. Sort of.
in terms of quantity?
In terms of ingredients, I mean, three, four ingredients top, that's all you need. Anything more than that, then it's a gimmicky thing, which generally is probably not going to work. And also, use decent ingredients. Just because you're putting them in a cocktail, don't get the cheapest stuff you can find.
So do you think it's worth investing in...
I think it's worth investing in something decent.
So what would that be in terms of the liquors? Would you say don't compromise on...
Your bases, your gins and your bourbon and your rums and things like that. Get something decent. It doesn't have to be stupidly expensive, but just not the supermarket own brand, just because, oh, it's going to go in a cocktail, it doesn't matter. Just get something nice.
I've also learned that it is worth investing in some of the really good stuff, because then you're like, oh, should people invest in the herbally stuff?
I mean, it's so subjective. If you like it, then yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's expensive, but it will last you, because you generally, any of those sort of chartreuse, any of the amaros, anything like that, you use such a small quantity that a bottle will last you a good 6 months, or it depends how much you drink it, but it will last you a long, long time.
It's a good point.
And it's worth it. But before you go out and buy something, go to a decent cocktail bar and ask them to make something. So if you like the sound of something that we've made, rather than going to spend £40 on a bottle of chartreuse or something and then discovering you hate it, go to a cocktail place. And if you like it, then invest. Absolutely. But there are staple bottles. You've got a bottle of maraschino cherry. You've got a bottle of gin. You've got some dry vermouth, and you've got some sweet vermouth. You can make a huge variety of cocktails with 10 bottles in your cabinet. You can make such a massive variety of stuff.
One thing to invest in, aside from your standard gins and your vodkas and your whiskies and your vermouths, you know, have vermouth in the house, is a bottle of maraschino.
It goes with so much stuff. Absolutely.
It really does work. It is
a staple ingredient that you can use with gin, you can use it with bourbon, I've used it with rum. It goes with so much stuff. And it's not horrendously expensive for a bottle, but it's certainly worth it, because it will expand your cocktail horizons massively. I mean, what about you? Any in there that I haven't mentioned that you've come across?
My highlights, you've mentioned a few of them. We had the Left Bank Martini.
Yes.
We've had some really nice twists on martinis, and those would always be usually my staple go-tos. We had Black Forest Sour.
Oh, God, yes.
That was a really nice one, which was surprising because it had Jaeger in it.
That was Jaeger and cherry brandy, I think.
It was, and it was with a sour, so it had an egg white through it. It had lots of lemon, and you were like, Jaeger, cherry brandy, the talk of madness. And, deliciousness.
Yep, that is
one that I think about a lot and go, oh, I must make that, but I can't. I don't want to buy a bottle of Jaeger.
Well, if you need Jaeger, there's some in the cupboard.
We had some really delicate ones, like the Water Lily and the Summer Rose.
Oh, yes.
We drank them. I'm like, oh, isn't this fine? Oh, isn't this lovely?
Desperately civilised.
We sort of put on weird voices and kind of thought, oh, it's like a summer party at our aunt's chateau, rather than, you know, the heavy whiskey ones. We're like, yes, down and drink and sit and smoke cigars. But one I think that we should revisit that was a solid hit, and given that poison is the secret ingredient,
yes,
is the Belladonna daiquiri.
That was a very, very tasty beverage.
A fine, fine beverage. Yeah.
And it's one that's actually people have mentioned as well.
Thought it would be a gimmick, and actually it turned out to be a thing of beauty. So,
it really was.
Well, is it cocktail time, Nick?
Well, I have to make sure I've got everything, but I think we could probably scrape stuff together.
Hooray! I think it is high time for us to go dash into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm, so we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Nick. So, must say, we've asked our fans for their personal highlights from the show. And one person did say, the way you say hello after we come back from shaking up a cocktail.
I don't know where that came from.
just doing a little bit.
Hello.
Yes, Sunshine77 on Instagram named your hellos after Shake Up a Storm as a highlight.
I mean, so obviously.
Keep it up, Nick.
Yes.
But we have our Belladonna daiquiri.
We do.
Way back when we made the Belladonna daiquiri, and I don't think we've actually made it since.
I don't think so, no.
For the one that we love, people have quoted. But let's see if it's lived up to its reputation. Dive in. So cheers.
Merry Christmas. It is damn good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd forgotten how good that is.
Yeah, so did I. It's really nice.
Yum. It's on the sweeter side, but it has such nice balance all the way through. Talk us through it, Nick. Remind us what's in it.
So you've got a dark rum. So you've got 1.5 ounces of dark rum. You've got exactly the same of amaretto. So there's a very heavy almondy whack coming through it, which is very nice. Then you've got lemon juice and sugar syrup. That's it, just shaken together. Yeah, and it's really, really good.
It's very nice. Technically incorrect to call it Belladonna daiquiri with the almond flavour in there. Should really be a cyanide daiquiri, but we'll gloss over that, shall we?
How kind you are.
Well, we have our cocktails in hand. I think it is time for us to start reminiscing, Nick.
Oh, why not? Absolutely. So there's a lot to reminisce over.
Yeah, we've got a few questions and thoughts on the cases, but let's start off, Nick, with highlights, your personal highlights from the last 2 years.
Personal highlights for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. But, I mean, as you know, I mean, I love the history ones. I love the historic ones. I love the slightly weird occulty ones. So just doing a lot of research and finding out about those has been fantastic. The whole Marchesa de Brinvilliers and leading into the whole affair of the poisons.
Yeah, the start of that our was, really big history
And that was right at the beginning. But that was fantastic. So interesting. So it was Catherine de Voisins and her sort of black masses and all this sort of stuff and her web of people all across Paris. That was fantastic. That was really interesting to research and find out about.
And you're very good at the history ones. I think this is where you hit your stride.
Yes.
We both have our skills and the bits that I think we both know between us that we're the best at. Your knowledge of history is just something that's ingrained in your head. You're just naturally very good at it. And you can tell it in such an entertaining way with all of that detail in there, melded it together beautifully. And I think when we started doing the Affair of the Poisoners trilogy, it was
I was having a great time on that.
I can just tell Nick's like, la 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 la.
Yeah, you remember that one.
Occasionally I have to go, like, just a little bit less history.
Little less history.
I have to cut this down.
Yeah, calm it down a bit. No one cares.
And so cotton was invented this time.
I mean, a lot of the French ones are really, really weird. Remember we did one on Anton de Ruse.
We did.
Who was the greengrocer who went a bit mad and got a bit above himself.
Yes,
and that was, that was great. That was really good fun. Mainly because wasn't that one with the Carthusian monk in it?
It did, yes, and I was not happy about that.
So, yeah, he was quite a jolly one. Again, with the history stuff, you got, like, Bathory, that was really cool. Mm. And then you go in the Peter Nears, or sort of, like, more sort of Germanic,
absolutely
medieval stuff, which is just grim and horrible, but, ooh, that's really interesting. That's really cool. I don't know if I can pick one particular favourite out of all of them.
I could. It's like picking your favourite limb.
Yeah, well, it's true. And then, I mean, I'm rambling on again. Me, the Chinese ones. I love me some China.
The China ones. Patreon.
They are on Patreon. We did the Yixing Bakery one, went out on the main episode.
It did.
While we had a little break. But there are some other China ones on Patreon.
History and China and witchy shit.
Yeah, and witchy shit, absolutely, yeah.
Do you want to make some sort of offshoot podcast of that, just called History and China and witchy shit, am I?
Yeah. Sounds great. I'll be up for that.
You'd be happy with it.
What about you? What have you all been your highlights?
Well,
things
I
you've
mean,
enjoyed
I,
most?
I was going to thank our fans, clearly, as you didn't, you know. Genuinely, we both said this, that it is you guys and the response to the show, the really kind comments, the feedback people have given us, that's always a highlight, even when we're feeling down. And anyone who's creative, anyone who is trying to do a podcast, anyone who's trying to write something, if you're just trying to get through the day or your working day, we're very lucky that we get boosts from the likes of you. So appreciated. You'll never know how much.
Yeah, it's lovely to read.
Thanks for letting us know that this works. So that's always a highlight. If you're out there and if you're starting to be creative, keep bloody doing it.
Sometimes you do get a week and go, oh, you're just not in the right frame of mind or something to do that. We both work full time as well as the podcast, so it's a lot of work. But then reading some of those things, it's like, no, people love this, people really enjoy it. And it really does give you that boost to go, right, yeah, absolutely, let's do it, let's record an episode, let's write another episode. It's great.
Good for the kids. Would someone please think of the children? But aside from you lovely people, my highlights, there have been a few. Going right back, I may have mentioned this in a live episode. One of my highlights is the William Palmer episode 3.
Yes, episode 3, right back.
Right back, but it was something about it when I researched that story, famously
Chicken the Horse, that's come back to us many times.
All the machinations of William Palmer acting a deadly doctor, fiddling with gas lamps, all of these things. It suddenly made me go, oh, there's something in this.
Very true,
this might work, because we were like 3 episodes in going, oh my God, is this just going to peter out?
Are we going to run out of episodes or anything? Yeah, no, there's some crazy stuff out there.
And it made me think, actually, we got a nice rapport on this one. And then when we got into the teens, when we got a bit further, then we started to hit our stride of just the craziness and then going, oh, actually, this is okay. I think we're doing a decent enough job. So William Palmer's always going to be up there. I don't think that there's a week, not every day, but every week I do think of Cornelius van Vinkvoorne.
He's on my list, actually, of things to talk about.
Thomas Wainwright, you find those stories and you're just reading going, ha, ha, ha,
absolutely. Yeah.
The comedy writes itself.
No, indeed.
The most bizarre, crazy guy, but Cornelius van Vinkvoorne, who can forget that pen name?
Yeah, I mean, I've written down his other ones here because I had to go through them. And so we had Egome Bonmot, was him and Janus Weathercock.
Janus Weathercock.
Who was his other pen name. I mean, that's just fantastic. And then obviously Cornelius Van Vingboons, which when I get a cat, and I'm going to get a cat, he's going to be called Cornelius Van Vingboons, and I'm going to glue a top hat to his head.
You couldn't get over that. And the reaction from when we recorded that, I still go back and listen to it.
I was listening to it today going, brilliant.
You would not stop talking about it. And the whole Bo Brummel and the champagne.
Yeah, champagne in the boots. Yeah.
It was just, oh, I've just suddenly found Nick in a past life. This is it.
Absolutely. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's those ones are absolutely brilliant. And it's finding the humour and the stupid humour in so many of these stories. Some of them are really bloody dark.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just how we sometimes descend into slight madness and strange strange stories that come off. So some of the highlights that our fans have mentioned as well that we had forgotten about, and literally just before we started recording. So the Madeline Smith episode from 93, when Nick started discussing the finishing school for girls.
Yes, I completely forgot about all of that. And then it came up, people were commenting on it, so I had to go and re-listen to the episode and go, what the hell was going on there? It's like my great maiden aunt or something, or me in a frock with a frock with a lace umbrella coming down some stairs. Yeah, why not?
Training girls at the touch of a man, even though she was a maiden aunt. Another highlight for me, wasn't sure whether to include this, you know, we're going to talk about the most bizarre cases, the most cunning cases, the highest on the bastardometer. Just a highlight for me is Dr. Pritchard.
His beard was excellent.
His beard, that beard, the look of him, and that episode, again, is one where we hit our stride. Listening back on that recently, going over that case, which is just perfect. All of the poisoning, that, you know, the arrogance of this doctor, the stupid things he did, handing out business cards to people in the street with his picture on it, to people of high society that he might call upon them, but had established himself as a GP locally, then moved up to Scotland, but was so determined to be accepted into high society, a little bit like Thomas Wainwright, bald with the biggest beard you've ever seen.
It was an excellent beard.
Thought he was the greatest lover that had ever been born, so he was draping himself across desks. Well, we made that up.
We make a lot of stuff up, to be honest.
But you're handing out business cards, clip-clopping around outside a church on his horse, going hello to everyone. That all true.
All true. All fact.
We did in that episode also segue very nicely into how Wolfsbane, monkshood, is used to stimulate horses in a horse race.
And that, oh god, we did, and that descended into ginger as well, if I remember.
Ginger and monkshood are used and rubbed on a horse's anus to make it run faster.
I mean, it's gonna get you going. It has to be said. I mean, I've not tried it, but.
That's emblazoned in my memory again.
I'm never going to forget that one now.
I'll never forget Dr. Pritchard because he's just too sexy.
I mean, he is a very, very sexy man. I mean, has to be said.
He's the man I picture while making love to my husband.
Me too.
I have questions on so many levels on that day. So, some highlights from you guys, from you gorgeous, gorgeous listeners. I do love Aaron Timothy, who's just gone Toblerone. We just started talking about Toblerone, and several people have got, Toblerone.
Yeah, Toblerone. So much so, when Sinead's come to my house for recording, she was doing some writing, I went to the supermarket to get some supplies, bought a fucking Toblerone.
It's now the sponsor of the show.
We are now sponsored by... But I'm paying them, though, for sponsoring.
I know, that we're not good
at We're not good at sponsorship.
Someone please sponsor us. We don't know what we're doing.
But Toblerones, yes.
Shilly Guy says, when one of us gets too drunk...
Yeah, that happens quite a lot.
There was one I had to cut out because you made me, and it's in outtakes. It was an episode with champagne.
Okay.
We had some fizz. We had a champagne cocktail. We were in lockdown. We were separate. I'd had a drink, and you drank an entire bottle of champagne to yourself, and you were just singing at the end like, la da da, I have drunk a whole bottle of fizz, everyone. I have drunk all of this. This is... probably in the 20s.
Yeah, I have no memory of this whatsoever.
No. And you said, no, can you cut all of that? But I was like, yeah, into the outtakes it goes.
I've humiliated myself enough.
So if you ever want to hear what's missing, on Patreon, our Patreon subscribers benefit from the tainted treats that we do. And that has been a highlight mentioned by some of our Patreon who love to hear the behind the scenes of what goes on here.
They're the episodes we come to know as the Negroni episodes.
Or the absinthe ones.
So, you know, generally... if I have a Negroni, I go slightly insane, which is great because it puts me in such a jolly mood for recording. Yeah, so a couple of Negronis, I'm a while away. I've no idea what I'm rambling about half the time.
Because I have to edit these. And when listening back, when I've had a few too many, or just the wrong side of too many, where I think I'm being really insightful. You know what? Well, you know what you're like.
Yeah.
In the pub where you've just like, no, but yeah, it's a government. It's the government, isn't it? Oh my God. And I'm just listening back while Sober going, you are making no sense, Sinead. Those episodes are shorter because I'm like, yeah, I had to cut 20 minutes. I went on about the Dutch for some reason. I don't know why. Duck content.
Duck content. Yes, there was an excellent, I think that was in the Yixing Bakery episode.
Yes,
which the Hong Kong episode, which has been on the main, was a Patreon, but has been on published as a normal episode. Yeah, there was a whole, God, at least 20 minutes of duck chat. About the Canterbury duck on there. And I think it culminated in me going, get the fucking duck! Get on with it.
It was an amazing duck that was in Canterbury during lockdown.
We don't need to relive the duck.
The duck is important. People,
the duck is gone.
To the duck.
The duck is no more. The duck has made been made into a tasty sandwich.
Don't you say that. You've got that press and you're crushing its bones. It's pate. Sashcon on Instagram, if I'm saying that right. Sinead shock when Nick's stories have a twist. I mean, I'm playing up to it a bit, but sometimes I'm genuinely, no, Nick, no. And also, they like your honesty when I ask how you are.
That I'm fucking right.
We've also got shout-outs, highlights for Wizard Sharks.
Wizard Sharks?
We talked about Wizard Sharks.
Did we?
Yes. It was on the Shark Bite one.
Okay, right, yes, that makes sense. But how did they turn into wizards?
This is the thing. I know we said it, and then you look back and go, oh, yeah, that was a whole thing. Wizard Sharks.
Wizard Sharks.
Wizard Sharks.
Yeah, great.
People love the multiple stories that we've done. We do those on Patreon.
Yes, the compilation ones. They're good fun, mainly because they involve brushes.
People have mentioned some of the episodes as well. Angel Makers of Nagrev. Mm.
That was one of the ones where it's hard to be jolly. It's hard to be silly, and it's hard to be jokey. And that was one of the ones which was actually came from a desperately serious and sad place.
Yeah.
Yeah, ended up being something quite horrifying. And but started off in a very pure starting point of people wanting to help women who were having terrible, terrible times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are good episodes. They're interesting episodes, but they're more difficult to be flippant about, as we can be on some of the other ones.
And we've always caveated that, and I dare say, in very much inverted commas, not saying that we're trying to do that, but they're important to tell those stories.
Absolutely.
Because while we try and have a laugh, and there are so many other great podcasts out there, if you want the dark and dim detail, please listen to them. We try and bring some humour to it, but every now and then we need to acknowledge that these are serious stories, and yeah, people died.
People died, absolutely.
Some really lovely comments of others, like Craig Davis, who said, favourite moments is generally every minute of an episode. Aww. You guys are fantastic. Premier League banter. That's a sports reference, Nick.
Oh, is that a sports thing? It's what's sports going on there? Okay, is that good? I don't know.
We've also got some comments on from our lovely Patreon listeners as well. Sinead's increasingly weird segues into shout-outs for new Patreons.
I mean, they do get weird.
They do. It's a thing now.
How you think of them all, I have no idea.
When we go insane about horrible cocktails. See, highlights again, lowlights would be...
I mean, that's something we're going to have to discuss today as well, is we've had some dreadful cocktails.
Oh, good God.
On this. So we're going to have to come back to this, I think, absolutely.
Okay, we'll come back to the lowlights. But people love our reactions to it. And so maybe the torture is what you guys are here for.
I mean, that's what people love, is people having a terrible time. Was it Schadenfreude, isn't it? People having a miserable time. So that's what people love. So it's like more terrible cocktails, and our ratings will go through the roof.
The London Burkers, someone loved that. Yes. Caipirinha.
Well, it was one that was so... Obviously, everyone knows about Burke and Hare, but the London Burkers is something that as you know, I certainly had no idea whatsoever.
Mary Ellen Piercy, who was going, killing mice, killing mice, killing mice, at the piano when she was discovered having killed people.
I don't remember any of that.
Why do you wipe this from your mind?
I don't know.
It's because it's my episode, isn't it? You're not even listening. Belle Gunness,
that's a good one.
I love that one. The farm kind of murders and the red
she's
barns.
On, she's on my list for discussion.
Yeah. Hinterkaifeck, yes. Mary May, Martha Merrick. We have the Papin sisters, which we did on Patreon. That was a great episode.
I mean, it's great, but it's dark. So sad. It really is depressingly grim, that one.
People do love Not Much Is Known About Their Childhood. We need to put that on a t-shirt.
It is. It's become a bit of a catchphrase, really, hasn't it?
They do like your increasingly weird backstories.
Are they increasingly weird?
When you make them up, I just say make them up, and then you just make up a weird backstory for people. You've done that a couple of times.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
One involved ballet, and it was
Okay.
A lot of love for the China episodes as well.
Yeah, we love a bit of China. I mean, the first one we did China episode was with Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories.
We did.
Yeah, we did an episode with her on the China. That kick-started the sort of whole China obsession.
The China movement.
The China movement, yes. Of which there now have been many.
Lots of highlights for us. But let's talk about some more specific cases.
Okay. So we've gone through and we've had to think. Murder, poisoning, not generally overly friendly pastimes. Really? They're not the most pleasant things. So, okay. Highest on the bastardometer.
The bastardometer. A lot of the cases we cover, you've referenced the Angel Makers of Nagreb. For example, you have some where murder is never acceptable.
It's bad.
There's never a reason for it. You've got some people who have been subjected to very difficult circumstances. Things have happened, shouldn't have killed someone, but you're like, oh, okay, you can understand that. To right at the top of the bastardometer, like, you did not give a shit about anyone. You had no excuse for any of this. There's never an excuse, but this was like Uber the other direction. You took an Uber to another town away from any excuses that you could have had.
Indeed. Who do you think you could claim to be most bastardly?
I have a few in mind. Okay. One, doctors.
Doctors,
greatest
just generally.
Poison of them all.
Generally, doctors across the board.
There have been too bloody many deadly doctor episodes that we've covered where people have used their position as a medical professional.
Yeah.
Maybe they've lied about their training. Maybe they've lied about their past. But they are so arrogant, generally in these cases, to go, I am a doctor. I want to be recognised and revered as a doctor, as a man of medical science, have used it to seduce women, to abuse people, and ultimately to murder people for their own financial gain.
Yes.
There are so many of those doctors. You've got Dr. Thomas Cream. You've got Dr. Cream. I think people confuse Dr. Crippen and Dr. Cream, because Dr. Cream was far worse than
Oh, he was,
Dr.
absolutely.
Crippen.
I mean, Dr. Crippen was one person.
One person. It just was very famous because of the Telegraph. But Dr. Cream, who murdered prostitutes, who was archetypal Victorian
very
villain.
Much so, absolutely.
But you have, as we mentioned, Dr. Pritchard. You have people who work in the medical profession. You have nurses and people who are training to be doctors who are just using their skills to be God, to play God. The supporting players to that are all the doctors who turned up and just went, oh, that's probably just cholera, or they're drunk. Clearly have been poisoned, and they went, nope, women's problems, that's the trouble here. So doctors, they are high on the bastardometer, unfortunately, in a lot of the cases. And any doctors listening, it's not you. We love you. But why?
I mean, I think there's one in particular who I'm going to have to highlight on this one.
Mm.
And someone who wasn't actually even a doctor, but Dr. Hazard, who is just a, I mean, just a horrendous, horrendous woman, who I think had this sort of strange thing of actually believing that what she was doing was for the best.
Yes.
But just watched people starve to death.
Created Starvation Heights, as it was known, this fad health treatment where people starved to death, and she allowed it to happen. A very interesting case.
Oh, absolutely.
One we've covered recently. But again, someone who was just obsessed with status and completely was convinced of their own dialogue, I guess.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
I will mention Alexander Pierce, because you really struggled with him, the cannibal in Australia.
Oh, God, yes.
The Bush Ranger.
Bush Ranger, yeah.
And it was a great episode because Nick just couldn't get over the fact that this guy ate his travelling companions, and it really touched a chord with you. So I think that
Well, it was sort of, if I remember correctly, it was the one that he did it. There's not necessarily any need to do it.
Mm.
There was alternative sources of food available and things, so you didn't have to kill and eat your mates.
No, he was in the middle of a McDonald's and he just went, you know what, that foot looks good.
Yeah.
No.
So
they were on the run.
They were, yes, absolutely.
Things happened. The cannibals seemed to register with you. I must say as well, for Patreon, Jonestown is up there.
Completely. Yeah, absolutely.
Jim Jones is the one case I think that has affected me the most.
You struggled with that one, absolutely. It was
I had to do a lot of research on it, and you listen to all of the accounts of Jonestown, because Jonestown happened in the 70s. It's in our lifetime, so there's recordings, there's footage, there's interviews, and you sort of spend some time listening to these people and reading their story, and that's why the Victorian episodes are much nicer in a way, because you can be sort of funny.
You can be somewhat, they're so much more distant, absolutely, and there's that disconnection between this is not, there are no living people who remember these events or who are affected by these events, so it is a lot easier to be flippant and a bit more silly about them.
Indeed. But Jim Jones, his actions result in the death of 909 people. And the whole of that story was so horrific because it started again from a good place.
Yeah.
It started seemingly as a good thing, ended up in a massacre. Was pleased we did it. I think
absolutely
very, very pleased with the episode that we did on it. But I did have to have a bit of a break afterwards. And I don't like this. How about you?
So, yeah, I mean, so you mentioned a few there. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, so doctors, Jim Jones was on there. Again, so one we covered over on Patreon, Amelia Dyer.
Amelia Dyer, baby farmer.
Baby farmers. Well, there are many instances of what's known as baby farming in the Victorian age. We've only ever covered one, as far as I recall, but yes. This one, because generally you've covered one, the reasons behind it, you've covered them all, and they're not jolly stories.
Yeah.
But a woman who was estimated to have killed over 400 children in her life, purely for greed, purely for I'm going to get cash out of, I take these children in, the state is going to pay me to look after these two children, the parish is going to pay me, then they die, and I get money out of it. So it is pure greed and evilness.
I don't know how much higher on the barstometer you can go.
Yeah, way up there. And say that she was by far, unfortunately, she was certainly not the only one, but she's the one that we have covered.
You've also got the likes of Mary Ann Cotton as well, who are killing members of their family and members of their married-into family, again, for financial gain.
Again, that's purely for financial gain. But, I mean, a lot of the people we have covered have killed for financial gain. It's just that Amelia Dyer, I think, requires a specific sort of highlight of just the obviously the innocence of her victims, just horrendous. And then on the other scale of things, the other sort of side of things, you've also got people like Issei Sagawa, the Japanese cannibal.
Yes.
who is still out there living his life in Japan, in Tokyo today. So who's someone who methodically planned and killed the execution of one of his university classmates in Paris. In order just, he wanted to know what human flesh tasted like.
So there's a reason we do these stories on Patreon, people. And this is not us just plugging, hey, go on Patreon to cover it. You know, that we cover certain really, really dark ones behind a paywall because they are close to home. You know, these people are still alive. We don't want to unduly upset people, but, you know, it's pretty much after dark kind of content. We also did, on the main show, Nanny Doss.
Yes.
Remember Nanny Doss? So the kind of people who prey on the lonely hearts.
Yes, absolutely.
The women who will prey on the men who just want a companion. And this has happened again the other way around. You've got men who are trying to seduce women who just want to get married and just want to have a companion. But yeah, Nanny Doss, she just was a giggling granny.
The giggling granny, absolutely.
And just had no remorse, just was laughing and smiling right to the end, like these men deserved everything that they got. Yeah. And they were just lonely people.
Yeah. I mean, and on the male version of that, you've got someone like Bella Kiss.
Yeah.
Who again, we covered on Patreon, so go on Patreon to have a listen to that one.
Who's just burying women in the garden in tanks of fucking oil.
24 women in barrels in his garden.
I mean, that's some... It's the technical planning.
I mean, it is so unbelievably... And who was never caught? No one ever knows what happened to him. Did he die? Some people think he died in the First World War. Some people think he lived to a ripe old age elsewhere. And no one knows. But met women through, Lonely Hearts columns, sort of like, wife wanted advertisements. and so when they were going through his papers and things like that, they discovered that he had agreed to about 70 odd proposals from women in writing.
Mm.
23 of them ended up in barrels in his garden. So...
We did have quite a few people responding when we said who should score highest on the barstodometer. We should acknowledge that a lot of people said Putin. fair enough. From Jennifer Bradley, Teacup Poisoner. Was a really popular episode.
Yes, back in the day.
Back in the day, but again, a fairly modern case. But Graham Young, chilling. Chilling, but no remorse whatsoever. Yeah. Watched people die just to see what would happen.
Just a very strict scientific research type. That's a slightly terrifying thing. We've covered the highest on the barstodometer, opposite end of the scale. the weirdest, the most bizarre, the stupidest people that we have covered in 2 years of the Poisoner's Cabinet. And there were a few for this one.
There were a few in there where you just go, what?
What were you doing?
I'm going to do a shout out for the Prophet Hen.
I mean, yeah, she's on my list. Yeah, absolutely. Mary Bateman, the Yorkshire Mary Witch. Bateman. I mean, for fuck's sake, she was excellent. Again, one of those sort of more historical ones that you just read and go, what the fuck was going on there? But the Prophet Hen of Leeds, who had their apocalyptic sort of prophecies etched in on eggs that were then reinserted in the chicken.
Oh.
So they would then lay these doom-laden eggs. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, she went for it.
There are moments in the stories that we cover, and I think sometimes that's what we're searching for when we're doing our research, because there's a lot of murder out there, people. But sometimes you read a story and there's just one little line in there where you go, wait a minute, this requires more research.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Prophet Hen is one that is just handed to you on a platter going, okay, hello. I'll do a shout out for the lovely Lacustre, one of the,
oh, yes,
the earliest poisoners that we've ever covered, the great Lacustre, who was working for the Romans, worked for Nero, worked alongside Agrippina the Younger. And a great story of Roman poisonings and dinner parties where, you know, some poisoned mushrooms were consumed. And when someone said, and when the person affected needed to throw up, they tickled his throat with a black feather.
Oh, yes, the black feather.
The black feather. And we had a black feather cocktail.
We did.
What happened to Lacustre is horrifying.
Oh, God, yes. I'd forgotten about that until now.
But it also makes you go, huh?
Yeah, how did that work?
It was decreed, go with me on this one if you haven't heard it, the first half is horrible, that she would be raped to death by a giraffe.
I mean, that's...
I mean... And I think, as we said at the time, you hear the start, go, oh, God. And then you go, mad? A giraffe?
Giraffe.
How is that physically possible? What?
Yeah.
What is up with that? What's going
that?
On? What's going on there?
I mean, that requires a whole lot of scaffolding and just sort of ropes and pulleys going on there.
And I think we can all agree that that was probably bollocks. That did not happen. It has been sort of embellished over time by the great writers at the time. Just went, I can put any old shit in here. I don't really care.
Yeah, people are living.
Wonderful. Interesting methods of death. You had the boiling to death. Richard Rouse on Christmas Day. We covered that as a Christmas story. But yes, being boiled to death, being broken on the wheel.
We've done that a few times, haven't we? Yeah, the breaking on the wheel. That's very unpleasant.
Bizarre cases. The lycanthropy ones always stay with me.
Absolutely.
The curse of the Talaman that we covered.
Yeah.
A historic case where a man genuinely believed he was turning into a wolf, and that entitled him to tear people apart and eat them and murder people as they wandered through the lonely hills near him. But lycanthropy is bizarre, and we've heard of it, we hear it in stories, but this is genuinely a condition that has resulted in multiple murders.
It may not find it's most bizarre, certainly most creepy. We've got things like Hinterkaifeck is up there.
Oh, Hinterkaifeck.
Which is just, it's bizarre because it's no one knows what happened.
Yeah.
So yes, sort of six people dead, who knows what's going on? And no one has ever been caught, there have never even been any particular suspects, really. Strong suspects in that. So that is just something that... It's just desperately unnerving. We will never know the truth. I mean, that's any of the ones we've covered, a few which have been unsolved, and they're really weird. On a lot of the episodes, you have like, oh yes, this person, they killed these people in horrible, horrible ways, and then they were found and they were brought to justice, and that's that. It's like a closure to the story sort of thing. They, yes, justice was done in the end, but then some of them it's like, but like.
Who
knows?
That is how the entire series of unsolved mysteries ends, with the narrator going, and...
I don't know.
That is why there are so many TV series and so many books about unsolved mysteries, because you are just sitting there going, what happened? I think I can figure it out.
Yeah.
And every time we do an unsolved mystery case, I'm going, I can do this. I can work it out.
We can figure it out.
None of the background, none of the documentation, none of the evidence in front of me, but I reckon something.
And then on the other hand, you got things like, I mean, the Ed Gein episode that you did.
Yes, Ed Gein was on there
was
as well.
Was on there as well. I mean, so bizarre in not the sort of like the mass murderer that everyone sort of assumes he is.
Yes.
Chainsaw Massacre is meant to be based on him and this sort of stuff. But obviously just a very, very unwell disturbed man, really.
And this is someone who has passed into folklore in the modern day and age because of cinema, because of the books and the films that are based on him, in inverted commas. But people misconstrue it. They think that Ed Gein was a serial killer and a mass murderer and just, you know, some evil creature. He definitely was evil. But his story is very different from what you assume. I was very surprised when reading it. Ed Gein was bizarre in the highest of orders. And listen and read the story of Ed Gein, because it was chilling. But like, wow, this is kind of crazy. Yeah. What drives someone to decorate their house with human skin have a bowl of nipples?
I mean, who doesn't love a good bowl of nipples?
When you come in, you know, what body parts do you have in bowls around the place? You have a belt, you have a woman's suit, and you have just basically bowls of nipples and various bones that you can collect. And he just had that as decoration around the house. There's one thing of, like, killing people because they remind you of your dead, oppressive mother, but then just decorating the house with that stuff. But he didn't invite anyone over.
No, indeed. No one got to witness all these lovely things. No. These position, delightful decor that he had invested in.
Yeah, it's, you do that because you're like, I'm entertaining. Come in, see my bowl of nipples. And maybe that's the thing that bothers me that much, that he didn't host anyone while he was doing that. You'd want to see the reaction of just, okay, well, you're insane, but I like what you've done with the arrangement of the skin here on this lamp. I'm going to scream now.
I'm going to leave.
Speaking of other weird dissecting of people, Papadenka?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Pickled pork.
Deliciously pickled pork.
Deliciously pickled pork.
Skinless pickled pork. That was a weird one. That was very much a weird one. So but someone in the sort of community who was so well liked and so loved Papadenka, they called him in the community, just because he went out of his way to help everyone and do lovely things, and to find out that he was this sort of utter monster, who had killed God knows how many homeless people down on their luck, sold their remains as tasty treats in the next in the next town over, which is like, oh my God. As soon as he was caught, and was caught not for murdering people, because apparently he just assaulted someone, he took his own life straight away, thinking, the gig's up. I've had my fun. I'm not getting away with this. There's no way I'm getting off with this. Done.
And that does give you pause of saying this is slightly stranger than the other cases, because it's not clearly the ego wanting to proster and go to court and say, no, I'm going to lie or I'm going to try and justify it. It's like, no, I know exactly what I did. Yeah. No. I'm going out on my own terms.
Exactly, yeah.
Ooh, I'm reliving it, Nick. We had some suggestions on Patreon as well from Devaney Carney, who said John Lynch and The Guidance from God. She said that she got her husband to listen to it just so he could enjoy how wild it was that someone can continue to commit murder just believing God is telling me to do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
God is telling me to do this. That in terms of bizarre and strong, people love Medici versus Borgia.
Yes.
Because it's that world of all of these families together and the political machinations that just had murders happening constantly. Yeah. People were poisoning each other. They had poison rings. They had cabinets hidden in their thing filled with poison, if history is to be believed. I say history.
I mean,
tour guides.
I mean, that's the thing we came across with Borgia. I mean, Borgia is the... You say their name, you think Lucrezia Borgia. Poisoner, evil woman, killed hundreds and hundreds of people. But no, absolutely not. Her father, her brothers, her uncle, bastards. She probably did nothing at all. But she is the one who's gone down in history because she's a woman, and women are evil.
We are?
As the sort of mastermind behind the whole thing, which is just utter bollocks. But it's all propaganda. It's all propaganda from the other side, demonising a particular person.
I will do a final shout out on the bizarre cases for the 1904 Olympics.
Yes, that was weird.
A recommendation from darling Tim Cloak, who's been one of our experts, twice has been an expert witness with us, and just said, look up the 1904 Olympics, and just sort of left that text message there. I was like, what? And that was a case that involved poisoning, and so many things went wrong. It is a story that you just need to have the music to Little Spanish Flea playing in the background while you picture what happened at this Olympics. Yeah. It's so good.
I'm going to chuck one more in, then we can move on. Somerton Man.
Oh, don't. I don't like Somerton Man. It's too weird.
It's too weird.
Who the fuck was he?
That is a true mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, even I know now they sort of, they've exhumed his remains and trying to do more testing and things like that. I don't think there have been any results just yet. But yes, and the whole sort of conspiracy thing and the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam and the book of the sort of this like medieval Islamic poetry and things like that. It's like, it's got all these threads of true conspiracy craziness that you can tug on.
Yet they all get shut off at different points. Yeah. That's the thing. As this man, unknown, with no ID, no marking, nothing to determine who this man was, how he died on that beach.
Yeah.
How? All of that. We don't know how he died. Every single avenue you go down is it, was he a spy? Was he doing this? And then we're like, no, because there was this thing that was definitely proven, but that led to nowhere. Those things make me angry because it's the... Maybe other people have this. I'm just so angry. I'm like, no, I demand answers.
I want to know. Exactly.
I want to know, and I'm unnecessarily annoyed about this. Yeah. And someone has to tell me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay that I don't know.
Yeah, it's the whole thing about a lot of episodes. You have closure. They were brought to justice, and they were executed. They were put in prison. Suddenly, we go back to the moment.
Well, Nick, seeing as we're maybe halfway through, is it time for maybe another little beveraging?
Well, I think we could perhaps have another wee beverage. So are there
beverage?
Any other ones in the past sort of couple of years that have taken your particular fancy?
Gin.
Just gin.
Just tequila. Maybe we should just go mad on this episode and just like open up the cabinet and just start mixing incidents in glasses. But I think it's a good time before we pour our next drink, because there is something we have in mind actually for another
this
highlight.
Is true.
But let's talk about the lowlights.
These are the drinks we will certainly not be making.
Everyone's been on the edge of their seat waiting for us to say it. The Golden Cadillac.
I mean, to be honest with you, I think there are worse ones. I think we've had...
I was tempted to make that fucker again and make you drink it, because, and I know how you reacted after the episode, because you were sitting on that chair going, oh my God, I'm not okay.
Yeah, I know, it was not a good cocktail. It was desperately unpleasant.
Milk and orange juice should never be put together. Yeah. It should never be put together. I don't care who wrote it. I don't care how good they were. No.
I'm entirely in agreement.
I tried to warn you, and you didn't listen.
But I also think, the Colonel Mustard in the library with a dagger.
Weirdly, in an earlier episode, I think it might have been, Pritchard actually, where we had doctors prescribing mustard poultice.
Oh, right, yes.
Poultice.
Yeah.
And this is way back when we were saying, oh, we joked, Nick, at the time, going, we could have used mustard, maybe in the future. And you went, oh, I've heard there's some mustardy ones. Look what happened.
I didn't say they were good ones. I mean, that was... I think that one was worse than the Golden Cadillac.
I will still say with the Golden Cadillac, because I will say that the Colonel Mustard one will go very nicely on a chop. It's a nice sauce. It's invented a nice sauce.
No, you're thinking of the other one we did.
Oh, am I?
We did the pork chop one, with Carl Denker.
One.
And that was the bourbon, the mustard, the apple cider.
Yeah, we didn't learn from the first time, did
we? No, we did. The Colonel Mustard, that was the one with like the mustard syrup.
Yes.
That we cooked down.
And cider, absolutely gorgeous on a pork chop.
Yeah,
I thought that was a great recipe for a gravy.
Yeah, so that was the pork chop cocktail.
Oh, no, the Colonel Mustard. No, there was
the Colonel Mustard. That was the bright yellow one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that was just... I don't know.
Oh, no, that was entirely vile.
But I'm not sure where we found the recipes for these ones. I don't know if either of them end up in Difford's.
No, they were just random ones online.
Of course, and Difford's like laughing in the background. I feel like the Golden Cadillac was trying to be a proper cocktail.
I mean, the Golden Cadillac is something that is out there. People serve it. Unless I just
lunatics.
Made it really, really wrongly.
Sadists. People who are trying to kill their loved ones are serving the Golden Cadillac. No one is serving that going, oh, it's a delicious drink. And anyone who does is then throws up everywhere while crying at whoever did this. I feel like the Golden Cadillac is, as you said, the people, oh, it's a really great drink. And people were trying to make that a good drink. And it should never have been invented, and it's wrong. I feel as strongly about that as I do about the Somerton Man.
So it would seem.
But the Colonel Mustard just seems like someone just took a pun.
You're not wrong, yeah.
Just went, I think this will work. The mediocre cocktails are worse.
I think that, those are the ones that are just the disappointing ones.
Mm.
And it's that, so it's good to have a strong reaction, either for the best or for the worst. I like those ones, which is like, no, that's dreadful. But the ones which are slightly disappointing, they're a bit like, Yeah, it's all right.
It's a waste of good liquor.
Yeah, I could make something better. It's all right, but it's like, well, yeah, there are nicer things out there.
Someone, again, was trying to be clever, but clearly did not have the palate for cocktails or for alcohol. And you can always tell from the great mixologist, and you've made some original ones on the show, and they've always been good, Nick. They've always been really good because you know what goes into a good cocktail. And you've researched it enough, you've put enough love into it. You haven't just gone
over a glass.
I mean, we have done that in the past. Though I've made you cocktails.
You have. Yeah, you've made some good ones.
I made up one very recently.
Yeah, you did.
It was a hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But enough of the lowlights. But now, can we go back to the highlights?
Yes, absolutely.
Another highlight.
Yes.
Which was a revelation.
Mm.
The JFK Harris.
JFK Harris.
With a red wine float.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, what alchemy and magic was this? Talk us through it again.
I mean, that was a brilliant one. It's rum, it's lemon, it's sugar. It's basically a daiquiri, but the sugar content is relatively high, so it creates a difference in density. So you can layer then red wine at the top,
and
it just adds something to it, which is quite beautiful. And also visually, it looks stunning.
Has been a joy every time you've tried it. So I think let's go to the Poisonous Cabinet kitchen, shake up a storm. See you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
We are back with our JFK Harris's. Mm. It's so pretty.
It is beautiful.
And I took some pictures while you were preparing it. And I didn't know about the viscosity or the density due to sugar that allows for the wine flow.
Allows for the flow. Otherwise it would just... See, and that's also why you generally put it over the back of a spoon. So you haven't got that one point of like impact. If you just pour it in, you've got your liquid going in at one spot and it's not going to layer. You put it over the back of the spoon, you spread out that sort of force out over the top so it layers easier. Mm. But yeah, what lets us do this is the half an ounce of sugar syrup, which makes the rum much thicker, really.
And I did see when you were pouring it in, even over the back of the spoon, the red wine seemed to be dissipating and then it just went straight from
floats,
the top.
Floats at the top.
No, it's science!
Science!
Nick, science and cocktails!
Science, bitches!
And you've also experimented with science on other cocktails. Shout out to the Jungle Bird, where you clarified
pina
colada thing.
That was really good.
We clarified with milk.
With milk, yes, indeed, yeah. And it, well, I also did it, not for the episode, but I did it with a clarified pina colada, and it is beautiful.
Mm.
I mean, it takes a fair bit of work.
And this is the process of what, straining milk
so,
to get the proteins
or better. So basically, what you do is you mix up a pina colada or a Jungle Bird, which is generally quite heavy in your fruit juices. So I think Jungle Bird is a lot of pineapple and things like that. So your normal drink will be quite cloudy. I think it's because of the fruit juice in there. But what you can do is if you add milk to it and some additional acid, so I think in this case I use lime juice, the milk and the acid curdle as they did in the Golden Cadillac. But this time they're doing it for science and you're not drinking it.
Science, people.
And you sort of pour it through a lined funnel. I think I just had some muslin and you pour it through that. And the milk sort of separates it into curds. So it's into curds, and that sort of creates a filter on the bottom of your muslin. So so as your drink strains through, it takes out all of those sort of impurities and all that stuff that's in there, and leaves you with a absolutely sort of crystal clear liquid. It's amazing to see it happen.
Yeah,
and the taste is beautiful, and it lasts for ages as well. Your result. You could put it in the fridge for 2-3 weeks or something, because it's all the sort of bits that would make it go off in the fruit juice and stuff like that have been taken out, but you're left with the flavour. It's incredibly clever, and I'm probably explaining it really badly, but it's well worth a go. It looks terrifying.
Yes.
Because you're left with this pink sludge.
Terrifying, and it seemed like a lot of hassle, but it was really worth it for the end result. You could taste the difference. We did the Fat Wash Bourbon as
well. Fat Wash Bourbon, which I was less...
It was kind
blown away by.
It had a bacony goodness to it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like super, super bacony. Wow.
I don't think it's meant to be super, super bacony. It's meant to create
I was waiting for.
It's meant to sort of create more of that sort of that mouthfeel and that sort of more silky, luxurious. Because you do a lot of ones which are like a butter washed as well.
Yes.
Which create that sort of, let's get that sort of silky, smooth feel. Mm. And I don't know if they add much to the flavour. The bacon one, yeah, you get a bit of a bacony, but I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing in a cocktail.
I don't mind a bit of bacon in my cocktail. Anything for snacks.
So
it's one that I would like to try in more professional cocktail bars. You know what? Hurrah for science and hurrah for Nick's size glasses.
It's good to have a bit of fun.
But for now, we have the red wine float in the JFK Harris.
And now we have the JFK
Harris. So let's dive into our second cocktail.
Yep. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Me, me, me.
Oh, it's desperately lovely.
It is entirely lovely.
Talk us through it, Nick.
So, rum, a lot of rum, 2 ounces of rum. Got some lemon, about 3/4 of an ounce of lemon. You've got equal quantities, 3/4 of an ounce of sugar. Shake that with a load of mint leaves. Mm. Get some minty goodness. Mm. Strain that out into your glass, and then you are layering about 1/4 ounce of red wine over the top. And it, you say, it comes from one of the best recipe books, cocktail recipe books I've got, which is Regarding Cocktails, Sasha Petrasky. Book. He was the man who sort of credited with the entire reinvention of the cocktails, sort of in the 90s, 2000s, primarily with Milk and Honey in New York, and then Milk and Honey in London. It's a fantastic book.
Hooray! Well, while we have our delicious second drink on here, it's given us pause for thought that I think we need to address two of the most requested mentioned characters in the show.
There have been some heavy drinking characters in the show.
There have been, but the two most popular, the ones that people always come back to and have featured a lot in the listener responses, incredible Iron Mike Malloy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the unstoppable PC Morris.
PC Morris.
Two people in two separate episodes who astounded us with their ability to drink.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. PC Morris is a really early one. I think it's like episode 5 or something.
No, it's about episode 9. It's Coffee with the Bodles.
Coffee with the Bodles, absolutely. So seemingly such a minor, inconsequential character for the story. But no one remembers the Bodles. Everyone remembers PC Morris.
That's so. It. And it's a really important story. I remember that starting. And the story of the Bodles is sort of an unsolved, in inverted commas. Well, the main culprit went free. It involved the Marsh test. It's a really important story in terms of poisoning murder cases. But then suddenly emerging was PC Morris, the arresting officer.
He had a warrant for young John Bodle, who was the suspect, and escort him to where the inquest was being held. Mm. On which he had many adventures on the way, shall we say. And then later, when again he was meant to be transporting some evidence around the place. Yeah, he got slightly waylaid by his love of the drop.
Yes, with escorting John Bodle in the first place, went to the Plume of Feathers pub.
The Plume of Feathers was where the inquest was being held.
Yes.
He went to the Cross Keys Inn was where they ended up on the way, having a nice glass of something.
Just any opportunity to stop and have a pint or a drink.
Yeah, and then it was a gin and peppermint at the Mortar Inn.
Yes.
He stopped on the way with John in tow, handcuffed in tow.
Just what is going on? And then when he was delivering the evidence, it was about 12 hours. He was on the lash. He left about 8 a.m., ended up wrecked at delivering this evidence, having gone to pubs, spilling it,
yeah, dropping the bottle of the bottle of liquid they had sort of gathered in evidence from the crime scene
that Marsh had to test. That was the cornerstone of this freaking trial.
He managed to drop in a pub, smash it, but it was okay because he saved some of the liquid in a tumbler.
Some
mysterious powders that end up being handed around the pub. Some chap dropped them on his trousers.
Poison trousers. And he was just like, look at me, I've got evidence. Way! Being lifted up, pub after pub, drinking. Whatever was handed in was probably alive and was just incident in a glass, if ever we've seen
one. But excellent, excellent man. Constable who was described by the magistrate as a very active constable. Very active.
I remember that. Active constable. Is that a passive aggressive?
Well, it's not a, is it not a very skilled or a competent constable? Or
he moves a lot.
Yes, he moves quickly from bar to bar.
He is active on his beat. I've never seen someone running so fast. When last orders are called.
Yeah, so he was an absolute legend. And we need to get some sort of t-shirts with, PC Morris.
We have said it before and we will get on it, but he is all of us. He is all of us on those days out where you go, I reckon I can carry on. And you're like, this is fine.
I mean, he's definitely us when we do our day drinking sessions.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where we meet we're going to town, get some shopping done, get to about 12:30, have a bit of lunch. Glass of wine. It's like 7 in the evening.
Look, everyone, at this evidence that I'm carrying from a murder trial. Everybody have a go on it. Love PC Morris. But there's PC Morris, who we know who can hold a drink. But then there's Mike Malloy.
But there's Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
Who I do feel is in a league all of his own, really.
Indeed. No longer with us. Now, PC Morris died a natural death, we believe.
Yes, indeed.
But Mike Malloy was a victim in this story that we told, yes, episode 20, where he was just a drunken man who didn't even know his own past.
Indeed, yeah.
Bar in New York and was singled out by a group of crooks who thought, he's someone that we can put an insurance claim on.
Absolutely, yeah. Something we can, yeah, the speakeasy was going through a bit of a rough time in the middle of prohibition sort of thing. Mm. So it's like, no, we need some cash from somewhere. There's this chap who comes in. No one knows his past. No one even acknowledges his existence.
No one shall miss him.
No one shall miss him. Let's do away with him and get some cash. Oh, that went wrong.
And you can see the picture, the four guys. I think it was four.
I think it was, yeah. Eventually, it morphed into many, many more as they had to get extra specialists in to try and do away with him. But
members of the public just coming in going, we have to watch this shit go down. Of just them going, we'll just get him nicely drunk and then we'll get him out of the bar and we'll, you know, he'll pass out or he'll die from the drinking or he'll die from the cold and we'll take him out in a car. Just every pint, every liquor put in front of him, he knocked back,
yeah,
without a care in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, so obviously starting off with the cheap whiskey, went to wood alcohol, nice, sort of, yeah, paint stripper going on there. That wasn't really working. Then they moved on to their wood alcohol infused oysters. Some oysters nicely marinated in wood alcohol. We had that.
What a pub, by the way.
I mean, they went on then onto a main course of rotting sardines and carpet tack sandwiches.
Yes,
happily munching away on one of them.
That is a point where you're standing there going, okay, he's drinking wood alcohol, desperate times. We've given him oysters, which the oysters were just liquid. There was nothing left. We've now put nails in a sandwich and he's eating it. You've all got to be standing there, yep, silently going, we have taken on more than we can.
Absolutely.
Handle.
I mean, they left him out on a park bench in the snow, dousing him with water. He rocks up the next day for a drink.
No, oh, I've got a thirst on me.
He got a thirst on me.
Didn't he pass out at one point and they think he was dead and then he just got up again?
Yeah, absolutely. He was in the bar and he fell off his stool at one point. They think, fine, eventually it's happened. Then this massive snore comes out of him. A couple of hours later, he wakes up, he's back on the stool, knocking it back again.
Drinking. So he's Irish heritage, and that's my, yeah, Irishman there, is he?
Absolutely. But I mean, they ran him, they tried to run him down with a car. And so about three times they tried to run him over, with one each on each arm, holding him up in the street as someone raced towards him. He rocks, and then they think, oh, we've got him, as he goes over the car. 3 days later, he rocks up back at the pub again. So, oh, I've been in the hospital. You won't believe what happened to me, lads. I can't remember a thing.
I mean, I love him.
Absolutely. I mean, eventually they did get him.
It was only a matter of time after, yeah, that. You know, I think they literally pushed the Empire State Building on top of him. That's how they got him. Now, gas. Wasn't
it was
it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was a hose from a gas lamp straight down his. Straight into his mouth. Oof. With a towel wrapped around
terrible,
his head. So
terrible, terrible end for a noble, strong man.
Yeah, absolutely. But thank me God they didn't get away with it. They soon realised that this was something very foul play had occurred. So
probably because everyone in the neighbourhood knew this was going on, because they could hear them just going, for fuck's sake, but, every night.
And the amount of people who were involved in the end of it. trying to...
Stage managers, yeah. Electricians,
yeah.
Lighting directors.
Absolutely. And with some really weird gangster names. Was it Tin Ear Smith? It was actually made out of wax. I don't know why it was called Tin Ear, I have no idea.
It does seem like the group was fairly incompetent. Like pretty incompetent.
Well, I don't know.
I like to think that it's because Mike was made of some other metal than earth, let's just say. But it just seems like they were trying bits and pieces and they didn't have the guts. They wanted this to seem like a natural death, but this was just ridiculous. I mean, yeah, if you're going to do this, like, it's going to be bloody obvious that he didn't choose to eat a nail sandwich and oysters covered in wood alcohol. It's not a normal dish.
No, well, indeed.
Or I mean, be run over.
Being run over, that could be an accident. He was pissed out of his head. He wandered into the street. He got hit by a car. That can be explained away.
I think the bruise marks are being held by every limb when I've given it away.
I mean, one of the sort of the main architects of the plot had actually been successful with a similar scheme before, when he killed a young woman, again dousing her with water and she was passed out, left in front of an open window in a New York winter, and she died of hypothermia. And he got an insurance payout. So thinking, I've done it once, I can do it again. Yeah. But obviously, very much picked on the wrong man on that occasion. Mess with the wrong man.
There's no Iron Mike Tyson. There's only ever Iron Mike Malloy.
Iron Mike Malloy, absolutely.
The big question is, who would win in a drinking contest?
I mean, Iron Mike, no doubt.
I don't know. I think that PC Morris has the legs to keep going. I think he can. Iron Mike can drink some heavy, nasty stuff, but he'd fall asleep.
And yeah, but potentially.
That, you know, is a drinking competition. You're not drinking yourself to death. It's last one under the table, isn't it? So you've got to stay standing. I mean, Mike Malloy would wake up and carry on drinking for weeks. But I think PC Morris would be able to match him to drink.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
I mean, we also thought PC Morris was an early aficionado of the cocktail with his combinations of gin and peppermint.
This is true.
He mixed his drinks
I'm sort of
nicely.
Slightly seeing a you and I vibe there. Slightly. And so if I was sort of like the Iron Mike, I would just drink and then I'll just fall asleep and then get up and drink a bowl. But you're the PC Morris, so you'll go out there, have some drinks. Right, let's go to the next place. Let's go and have some more drinks to the next pub. So
if it's the right drink, then
I can see. I can see that going.
As I said, the English drown in drinks, the Irish float. Only on the certain ones, not with the wine. We know what happened that day with the wine and cheese. So, as we said, so much love for Mike Malloy. Marcella Jensen, Mike Malloy, who couldn't just be killed and helped catching his murderers.
Yep.
Amy Gallagher, the maddest case so far, and there have been so many, is Mike Malloy. That poor man just clung to life as hard as he could. That's all the story of PC Morris. And she asked, did I ever write a song about him? I never was going to write a song about PC Morris because it just writes itself. It would just be a drinking song. Maybe we could all just come up with like an oldie-timey chant that is about PC Morris and Mike Malloy, and they run off together into the sunset. That's how my story song would go. It would get weird. Mike Malloy by Kipriana. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Mike Malloy is by far my favourite story just because it was so outrageous. Yeah, off-brand Steph, PC Morris all the way. Now, one of our lovely Facebook listeners, Agnieszka, I believe, Kreisel, when it comes to better drinker, then Iron Mike wins with sheer fortitude. But overall, I prefer the story of PC Morris, for his is not one of dark addiction, a dark story of addiction and murder. His is a story of just getting happily plastered on duty.
I mean, yeah, absolutely right.
So it's a nicer story.
Yeah. It certainly is, yeah.
I'm on board with that.
Yep.
Craig Davies says, Mike Malloy and PC Morris is a tie. I like to think there is a pub in the afterlife and they have become best drinking buddies.
Oh, nice.
Oh, isn't that nice? They're up in, well, I don't know if they're in heaven. Purgatory waiting to go.
Absolutely.
They can't get into heaven because they keep drinking in the purgatory bar. Like Angel Gabriel is like, come on. Hell won't have them. They're like, there is not enough liquor in the world. PC Morris, Mike Malloy, we love them. Talk about the best drinkers, the weirdest, the craziest people. How about, Nick, the most cunning?
Is it the most cunning?
The most creative or the most, you know, not necessarily the most bastardometer, but the most calculating, the most cleverest.
So
the most cleverest?
The most cleverest.
We are really not helping that, are we?
I'm not on that list myself.
So, the most smartest.
The smartest one.
The smartest five.
So I think there's a couple of people who fit in there. One that actually I did notice that many people have commented on, Christiana Edmonds. As being just a cold-hearted cunning. She knew what she wanted.
Mm.
She knew how she needed to get away with it, and she went for it.
So a great story, Christiana Edmonds. It has been covered a lot recently by other shows. I think her reputation is starting to build again, but she is known as the chocolate cream killer. Was obsessed with her neighbour, a doctor.
Yes.
Greatest boys and have them all. They're the love drug. Obsessed with him and completely blindsided by, I think there were some letters back and forth.
Yes.
Inappropriate. He was leading her on a little bit, but he's in love with me and I need to get his attention.
So I think, yes. So she obviously tried to do away with Dr. Beard's wife by leaving poison chocolates. Then it was discovered that these chocolates are poisoned, but rather than trying to pin it on her, she tried to pin it on the confectioner, the person who made this. So then she went around poisoning all manner of sweets around town from this particular sweet shop. So the suspicion would be deflected away from her and onto the sweet shop.
And so, leaving them in the street, giving them to children, sending them to colleagues and people she knew, and it resulted in the death of a child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is heartbreaking.
Just all that to just try and... It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't me, it was someone else.
Thought, if I get rid of his wife, he's going to be able to come away with me.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is that someone else can die, and it's collateral damage. It's okay.
It's fine.
It's chilling, isn't it? It's crazy, but very calculated. And thanks to the poison book that was introduced at the time, they could trace her purchase of poison back. I did also like that story because it did give us insight into how women were treated.
I mean, it did. Day and age. I remember that episode being giving me a great sort of anatomical lesson into the, not particularly my area of expertise, but into the wandering womb. Yes, that's how things work. So I learned a lot on that one.
Absolutely. It basically, I'm upset. Your womb trying to climb out. The genuine feeling that the womb moved around the woman's body. It was some sort of parasitic creature, and you either had to chase it down the gullet by using horrible herbs, I think, at the mouth, so it would go back down.
Yeah.
Or around the vagina.
Or sweet-smelling things.
Sweet-smelling things. Come down here. And the womb was wandering all over the place.
Yeah.
She was sent to a mental institution, and she was not helped. It was just that she's got women's hysteria, whether it was PMS, whether it was hormones, it was nothing can be done because the womb has a mind of its own. Was not helped. She was not helped when she should have received help.
Well, indeed.
Really, I think all the doctors looking back going, oh shit, we misjudged
well,
that.
Yeah, we fucked that one up.
She did also use the great line, pregnant, in court.
Yes, indeed.
She did, and had many a wise woman. I think it was like, these wise women who will come and prod her and check it. Oh, she's definitely not pregnant. She's definitely not pregnant. Her womb has already gone off on holiday.
Yeah, there's nothing to be down there in a long time.
The male doctor's like, I think you'll find her womb is in her mouth. You need to leave. A great case, Christiana Edmonds. Fascinating, beguiling, and terrifying, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cunning.
Cunning.
I'm going to go back with another bunch of ladies.
Oh.
I'm going to go with the invention of the great Aqua Tofana.
Yes.
And with Juliana.
Juliana, absolutely.
Juliana. So, I mean, that is high up on the cunning list of these women, of this whole circle, and a great episode to go back and listen to. Written by Nick and the wonderful history episodes. But yeah, Julia Tofano, like the creation of a poison that can be perfectly administered, all of this hiding of poison in your makeup cases, giving it to ladies to make sure that they can do away with husbands or lovers at exactly the time frame that you wish.
Yes, the right dosage, down to the minute, sort of, if you get the dosage just right.
A day, a week, a year or 2 years.
Absolutely.
How it was a year or 2 years is bollocks.
I'm not entirely convinced about how that was actually, if that was actually true or not, but the legend persists around it, which is fantastic. And something that we still do not know what this poison was.
No.
At all, we don't know what the ingredients were. Yeah, so a fascinating thing from... Ooh, that's weird.
And I also like the... this leads on to the affair of the poison.
Absolutely,
yes. You mention it as your highlight, but I think it's a great example of the cunning, that wonderful era of sort of you know, poisoning at court and outside of court, obviously, as well.
Absolutely.
But the Marquis de Brinvilliers, all of these people who are just using their wiles, their rhetoric, their connections to secretly poison people, and the ripple effect that it had, this terror that it created before poison panic of arsenic in Essex in the Victorian era. In Europe, the absolute horror suddenly that everyone could be poisoning each other.
Absolutely.
And really proper, period drama stuff.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's something that sort of that side of things started in sort of in Italy with sort of people like the Borgias and stuff like that who had poisoners on their payroll.
Yeah.
who were there. They were professional poisoners who were employed to get away with annoying...
Enemies?
Yeah, enemies or people who are in their way in court and stuff like that. And those people migrated from like Italy and things into France.
Mm.
And then you get the poison shenanigans in the affair of the poisons and things like that. You get in France, and then that eventually comes across into England.
Yeah.
Into the UK. But it's sort of, this raft of poison stretching across Europe in that sort of period.
And this is the thing about poison in itself, is that it has a far longer history than we can comprehend, actually.
Absolutely.
That we think, because of the wonderful Victorian cases that we cover predominantly, poison panic started with the sale of arsenic after it was, you know, Industrial Revolution and everything like that. And arsenic was suddenly readily available. And then somebody went, oh, no, you can poison people. Let's put in some laws to stop this shit. Yeah. The law consisted of write your name in a book. We won't follow this up whatsoever. Ooh, actually, we need to do more. Strychnine, help yourself, mate. We think that's when it started. This has been going on for
absolutely
centuries and hundreds and hundreds, back to the
thousands and thousands of years
with
the custard. And we also did the episode on Mithridates and things, and on Patreon, which is going back to Roman and Greek sort of era. I suppose in the Victorian period, what you get is the invention of the popular press. So the so there are a lot more stories available for us now to look back on and go, so you think of it as this explosion in poisoning and stuff like that. No, it was just written about more.
I think also the legal system as well.
It was just, so in the past, there have still been probably the same amount of poisonings. People are still trying to kill each other, but it's just, it is now just much more known about.
Well, I don't know. I think there's, certainly in the Roman period, in the Greeks as well, for centuries, as I said earlier on, you have some of these great writers who are the great documenters of things at the time, and will go into great detail about what happened within the courts, within the, you know, the nobles and the lower classes. Again, where you have professional poisoners who were on the payroll, who were being paid to go around. People were killing each other right, left and centre, but in very cunning, creative ways.
Absolutely.
They were employed. You could trust no one, but it's a wonderful period. But absolutely written about in, like, this is what happened. So the detail, I think, way back when, was better in a way. Even with the affair of the poisoners, people would be writing about it because, again, you know, how can you tell the story? People are writing it in novels, people are writing about plays, and they're writing it in letters, and they're trying to do the accounts of it. The hysteria about poison in the Victorian era is much more panic. We really should do something about this shit. No one seemed to say that earlier on. They were like, no, this is fine. This is just a thing that's going to happen. And there's nothing we can do. Yeah. Whereas then they suddenly went, maybe there should be a law.
I suppose because also originally it was seen as, perhaps it was a thing between sort of kings and nobles and stuff like that. And that's not for the common people to sort of fuss around with.
Well, that was the great part of the affair of the poisoners and all of that story, and some of the stories that we did in France as well, of the time of the great hats.
Yes.
And the balls and the ships in your wigs and stuff like that. These nobles did think that poison was just something for they thought the opposite. They thought, you know, poison was for the lower classes. It was, but now people are poisoning the royalty and us rich people. My God, the servants poisoning you, that was the terror.
Bad things don't happen to rich people.
No, bad things never happen to rich people. And again, in the Victorian poisonings, we've got a lot of servants, you know, exacting revenge on their employers. It turned out then, because we have better court reports of, yes, well, we were poisoning them because they were raping us, or they were just, you know, we had to bear their children, or they were beating us senseless all the time. So, yeah, you know what? We're going to put arsenic in your stew, you bastard.
I'll say another one I'm going to go flag up there for the most cunning and the most calculated and one of the cleverest ones, the Yi Sing Bakery.
That is very good.
The jar there in Hong Kong, where
you would bloody pick a Chinese. Well,
I would. I mean, but I think it is. I think it is so clever
good.
How they came up with this plan that would only affect the people they wanted to, but on a massive scale. So if you haven't listened to the episode, it's a set in sort of colonial Hong Kong, where the indigenous sort of Chinese population want to get rid of the European invaders, colonizers. So they decide to poison the bread through one particular bakery. Only the Westerners eat bread. The Chinese inhabitants don't eat bread. It's not a Chinese thing. So they decide to poison the flour, which would only affect the Westerners. And it did massively. Over like 400 people fell horrendously ill. Fortunately, there was only one person who died because they completely overdid the arsenic and just got entirely carried away with far too much. So everyone just vomited everywhere. But if they had half the dose, it would have wiped out the entire Western community in Hong Kong, which is slightly terrifying. But that level of realization, well, we don't want to kill the Chinese people. We want to kill these white people. They have this bread. They don't eat. They eat that. If we can taint that. But that is a level of cleverness and planning, which I think is quite impressive.
It makes you sort of terrified because it's the sort of thing that makes you stay awake at night going, how many things worked that we'll never know?
We'll never know,
How many things worked and we've never questioned and we're like, oh, God. Everyone who has died has been poisoned. Yeah. Oh, my God. Great, great story. I'll say my other inclusion would be for cunning, Burke and Hare.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They made a business out of death.
About they did.
They had a system that they, you know, Birking, to kill people who were poor, who no one would miss. And they think, okay, well, let's look at this demand for corpses by anatomical professionals and universities and people who are studying anatomy. So, yeah, let's just deliver them corpses. And this was a business. This was a business that was operating around the UK and up in Edinburgh. Yeah, people are like, oh, yeah, I'll pay you for a fresh corpse. No questions asked where they came from.
Definitely.
And then were found out and later on obviously punished for their crime. Well, sort of. You know, actually one of them was punished. The other one just ran off. But that's cunning. That's clever.
Yeah.
That's clever. It's horrible. Maybe some of the most cunning ones, as I said, you know, the things that have been successful are all the unsolved ones.
Well, yeah. Well, that's very true. Absolutely.
The people who got away with it.
People who got away with it. The people like Bellicus and stuff like that who were never found and never discovered.
Yeah. A couple of people mentioned George Smith, who was the Brides in the Bath murderer.
Yes.
Who had found a way of killing his various brides by drowning them or seeming like they had been drowned. Cunning, even though he was sort of eventually caught, like, how did he get away with it so many times? Which is quite scary, a little known case, but he killed several people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But nobody likes that. Also mentioned for the Green Bicycle murder, both as bizarre and also cunning, because what the hell happened?
What the hell
there?
Happened? Absolutely.
A recent one, and it was a good one as well. Janely Montez has mentioned it for the commentary, for our commentary on it. Because it was a good story. I wasn't sure about that one. And then it was actually like, there's a lot to chat about.
There's a lot going on there.
A lot of cunning murderers. The people who got away with it, well done, I suppose.
There's a slight grudging respect, I suppose, maybe.
I think that is why I like the Victorian era, because you have this wonderful period in history where people have realized poison is being used to just do away with anyone who is bothering you, because arsenic has been so readily available to the agricultural communities. You can buy every kind of poison across the counter, and it's just witnessing this slight shift to no, we need to introduce the poison book. No, we need to have more details on this. We need to add far more poisons than arsenic to all of this. We really need to be examining it. And just this slightly it has resulted in lots of murder cases that we can cover.
Yeah.
Later on, it's just, if this show has proven nothing, it's that you definitely can't get away with poisoning anyone.
Absolutely
ever.
Not. Absolutely not.
It will be. You will be found out, and it's not the secretive method that you think it is.
Indeed not.
But I suppose, Nick, we should conclude with the big question, really. What is the greatest poison of them all?
What is the greatest poison of them all?
What are you going to go with?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? It is a difficult one. I think money.
Yeah?
Yeah,
greed.
Money. Greed. Because so many of these stories are done for personal gain, just for cash. And no matter how desperate these people might be, like people like Amelia Dyer, lived a horrendously awful life and needed some money, but chose to do that in the most vile, horrendous way possible. So yeah, so I'm going with greed, cash.
I'm going to go with arsenic! Arsenic love!
There we go. Yeah. We knew it was coming.
I was tempted, obviously, I've said, but you know my feelings on
doctors. Yeah.
Not going to go with, but was very close to saying religion.
Well, yes, absolutely. Yes. I agree.
God damn it, how frequently is religion featured in the cases on the main show, on Patreon? We keep coming back to religion. No judgment whatsoever. If you are religious, we're not saying that religion is wrong, that if you have a faith, then you are entitled to that.
Absolutely.
No judgment whatsoever. But religion and people misconstruing it, and I don't think religion is necessarily the problem. Go with me on this.
It's people's
one.
Interpretation of religion, I think.
It's people's interpretation.
It's people thinking that they have the only right one.
And that's what brings me to what I think is the greatest poison of them all is power. The drive for power.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, that encompasses everything, really, doesn't it? You've got cash, you've got more power.
And it's power and reputation.
Yes. Yeah.
There are so many people in this. The doctors, the cult leaders, the people who just wanted to be in high society. They just wanted to be revered. So there's a degree of power in that, yeah, and recognition. Ego with power, they go hand in hand.
God, absolutely.
But I think that covers it. With religion, usually it's not actually a genuine spiritual feeling that these people have. No. Maybe it started as that, and it started from a good place, but it ends up being, I need to be the one in control, mm-hmm, and I'm going to control your lives, and I'm going to destroy them as a result. So it's always the individual at the end of it who is running it. So yes, power and ego, the greatest bison of them all.
Yeah.
But also Toblerone.
Also, no Toblerone, no.
After you've had too many cocktails, that maybe you don't know.
I'll let you know when I've eaten some more Toblerone. So, but at the moment, I'm going, absolutely not.
No, yeah, Toblerone, great. Chartreuse. Chartreuse, the greatest poison of them all.
Beer, the greatest poison of them all.
I made you a beer cocktail and you liked
did
it.
Actually, yeah, no.
You bloody liked it.
I did come across that one. I almost made it to my cocktail list and I go, no, I can't say a beer one. So, okay, fine.
What is the greatest poison of them all? What do you think, people? We hope you have enjoyed our roundup of season one and season two. There's been so many episodes that we wanted to get through and talk about, a bunch of ones that I'm sure you'll all jump on and go, hey, what about this person? But thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being with us through 104 episodes.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going into season three. We would love to hear your suggestions of the types of cases that we can cover in season three. Anything different you'd like to hear? You know what? Just message us. We Absolutely. Might consider it.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we're always open to new ideas and new exciting things. Are we going to run out of cocktails? That's the thing. Are we going to run out of secret ingredients?
Never.
So you're going to carry on throwing more and more obscure things at me.
As we've said, we are going to take a tiny break between season two and season three, purely because Nick and I are going away. We will be back very shortly with season three with more episodes. So keep sending us suggestions of stories we can cover. Keep sending us suggestions of cocktails we should be considering or any other beverage that needs to make it onto the poisonous cabinet. If you haven't already, please consider joining Patreon for as long or as short a time as you wish to, and tell your friends about the poisonous cabinet. We love you and we hope you will stay with us for more deadly shenanigans into the future. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you very soon. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.